Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that definitely have a criteria for the artists I work with, that they rehearse, you know, that they show up on time, that they work their voice, that they, you know, they're committed to their craft in a way that's Olympian-like, you know, like, you know, I think people that have that kind of hunger and that drive are the ones that really get there. And I don't want to have to be chasing after anybody to make them rich and famous. I don't chase money. You know, so I think it's all about really building like real careers and people who are just as committed as I'm going to be to them.
Welcome to Latin Hitmakers, the Billboard podcast that tells the fascinating stories of the executives behind the greatest Latin artists and the hits that have been the soundtrack of our lives. I'm Leila Cobo. Today, we're talking with Rebecca Leon, the founder and CEO of Lionfish Entertainment and manager extraordinaire to Rosalia, Lunay, and St. Pedro, and former manager of J Balvin and Juanes. There aren't many female managers in Latin music, not many women to draw inspiration from. But Rebecca was always fascinated with the notion of taking an artist she truly was crazy about and convincing others of just how good this artist was. At 29 years old, she left a major label job to manage her first act. Then she headed to concert promoter AEG to head their Latin division, and at the same time began to manage Juanes. Things took off. Rebecca signed J Balvin when he was still largely unknown in the US and steered him to stardom before parting ways in 2019. By then, she had signed Rosalia and also steered her to superstardom. It's an uncanny ability to identify rising stars. Today, how Rebecca Leon became a manager that creates stars and how she does it. And it starts with a song.
El demo lo canto con Honduras. Dicen una estrella, una figura. De Héctor aprendí la sabrosura.
You have this artist, Rosalia, who's this very exquisite Spanish artist who does this very elevated music, and you turn her from a niche, kind of very elite artist to a massive star. Mm-hmm. And it started with this song, didn't it, Rebecca, would you say?
Well, first of all, I would say that she did this, not me. You know, she's the mastermind behind all those amazing songs and moments that she's created, and so happy to and proud to like stand next to her because she's really like a once in a lifetime artist, you know. And I would say really it started with Malamente because we had the support of YouTube. It was a program that was created called the Foundry Program, and it helped us to get a lot of international exposure right away. So with Malamente, we immediately, that video started charting in like the UK and, you know, and just in Japan and all over the place. So that was a huge, and in the US too. And that was a huge, like, I think, like a putting her flag in the sand, like, hey, I'm coming, you know?
You signed Rosalia at a time when she was a very niche artist. Mm-hmm. She had released music on a very small indie label. Very few people know her. Mm-hmm. But tell us the story, because I think it's a great story about connections and what connections can do. Another of your former artists brought her to you or show her to you, right?
Yes. Well, I was with Juanes, and we had gone to Spain for La Voz, and his co-coach was Bebe, the Spanish artist Bebe, who I love, and she's amazing.
You were still managing Juanes.
Yeah, I was managing him, and we were partners in management business, which J Balvin was our client. Mm-hmm. And so she came and showed us this video of Rosalía, and we, you know, it was like, I remember she cried like at the table. It was like, she's like, this woman, it's just too much. And so that night she invited Juanes to go to a show with her to see Rose perform. And he called me that night and he was like, like, you don't understand. Like, this is like Edith Piaf, like one every 50 years. Like, this girl's gonna change everything. And so then he invited her to perform at his show in Madrid at the arena, and she came, and that's when I met her.
That's the first time you saw her perform?
Yeah, and I mean, I was already like really, you know, what she had put out already musically was so powerful, you mm-hmm. know? So it was already something special, you know? And then when I saw her perform, she came to the show and she was such a boss. Like, I had never in all my years seen something like that. Like, she was just like, she got on stage, she knew exactly what she wanted to hear in her ear monitor. She wasn't gonna like let it go. She wanted it exactly right. Like, she stood on stage with all these guys and just, you know, had her way, you know? And it was one of the most like inspiring things I've ever seen. Oh,
so wow. Even before she sang a note, she
just
had
her
you.
Presence.
She had you at hello.
She had me, yeah. Second I saw her walk on stage. And then she opens her mouth and it's like angels singing, you know? So that night we talked and she was like, I'm looking for somebody, you know, a manager to help me, you know, kind of get my career to the international level. And beginning, it was like a lot of people didn't see it. You know, it was something, like you say, it was niche and, you know, it wasn't so clear.
Did you see it?
Yeah,
did
her.
You immediately think I'm going to sign her?
I'll bet on Rosalía every day. Every day, no matter what she does. Like, she's, you know, there's nobody like that. Like, I'll bet on her every day. If she says to me tomorrow, I really want to put out a country album, let's go. You know, like, she'll crush it. Like, I think she's the most gifted artist I've ever been in touch with.
So you signed her right away?
Yeah, so we started working together very soon thereafter, and she came to Miami, and we had meetings with her mom, and it was, I'm not gonna say it was a struggle because it was a very short period of time, but the beginning wasn't so, there were offers on the table, but they weren't like good offers. You know, mm-hmm. they weren't like, you know, let's sign your life away offers. So we went to YouTube and it was Vivian Lewitt. And we said, listen, this is an independent artist. She's a female, she's a writer, she's a producer, you know, she's everything, and this is exactly the kind of person we should be putting a light on. And you two, you know, Vivian was like 100%, like, I'm all in.
Did you have the video?
No, she helped us finance it.
It's a wonderful video, the video of Malamente we're talking, which
yeah.
of course shows Rose.
And Piensa en tu vida.
It's all these imagery of bullfighting
yeah.
with the cars, and of course
and
she looks
and, yeah.
very, very different from anything that I've ever seen.
Anyone's ever seen, yeah. Yeah, and it's, I think at the end of the day, you know, it was a matter of, you know, time. It was just, you just needed that one person to see it, you know, and like, just let her do her thing, and there it was, you know. And then after that, like, you know, the conversations really changed. And Sony, to be fair, like, they were always interested. They were always there. I think the projection of the project really changed, you know, as time evolved, and like, this thing is actually bigger than maybe people thought it was gonna be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just, then she started doing shows and like just crushing, you know, festivals, and like, you know, her performances are like nothing else, you know what I mean? So that started running, and then, you know, Columbia Records, you know, got interested, and everything just kind of escalated. And it was really just an exciting time because I think she hit a note inside of everybody.
Well, you've managed very big artists.
Yes.
You've managed Juanes, as you said.
Yes.
And then you really were instrumental in making J Balvin mm-hmm. a big star. But the J Balvin process took many years.
Yes.
Rosalía seemed to happen
it
overnight.
Was explosive. Yeah, It was explosive. I got them at very different moments in their careers. You know, like, you know, when I started working with Rose, I think she had like 70,000 followers on Instagram. You know, a video had like 100,000 views, the most mm-hmm. seen video. You know, it was still very like indie and, you know, underground to a degree. But, you know, I think when you have people that are so special, you know, like the two of them, it's like, really, our job is to just put the light on them, you know, and mm-hmm. let them shine. Because I would never take credit for anything that they've done, because I wasn't in that room when they were making those songs, and I don't get on stage and sing the, you know, and perform. But it's like you just have to put as much light on them as possible so everybody sees what you see.
Before you were a manager, you headed AEG's live division, Latin division. But what I think many people don't know is that you actually were a manager very early on in mm-hmm. your career. You you used to work at Sony, then EMI, mm-hmm. and then you left the label to manage an artist. So mm-hmm. tell us about that experience, because it seems to me like you've always had that management bug. How old were you when you were a manager the first time?
29. When I left, I had worked at EMI and Sony for like 7 years. And then I went to go manage JD Natasha. She was a young artist. I think she was 17 when I left to go manage her. And I had no idea. I mean, things were so different back then, you know. I had no idea what I was doing. But I knew that I believed in myself. I believed in that I had good taste, you know, and that I had vision. And that, you know, like I could convince people to see what I saw, you know, like I kind of like that's the basic core, I think, of management, you know. So I believe I could do that, and so the rest I would figure out. And
did you figure it out?
Yeah, I mean, you learn, you know, sometimes, like, you know, by getting punched in the face, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like shit happens that you, the mistakes are where you learn, though. That's mm-hmm. when you really define yourself. Like, success is super blinding. You know, you really, when you're in the middle of it, you don't even know why it's happening. You just are happy it's happening. It's like, you know, it's the failures that really make you grow and like self-reflect. I mean, if you take them as learning experiences, you know, which you should, because that's what they're for. But, you know, lots of mistakes, you know, lots of bad decisions. But in the end, I think ultimately I always was fearless.
So you left a job at a major label, mm-hmm. and what did you do? You took your own money out of your pocket and invested into your company?
No, not quite. So while I was working at the labels, I used to like promote clubs on the beach, because mm-hmm. this is like, you know, the end of South Beach, I guess, the last hurrah.
I didn't know you promoted clubs on the beach.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so there was this guy I used to hire for my DJ. I was going to leave to go manage Natasha. We did a showcase at William Morris, and he shows up in a suit and tie. And I was like, what are you doing here? You know, he's like, oh, I never told you this, but I'm actually a banker by day. Uh-huh. I'm like, what are you talking about? And so he pulled me
this
aside.
This is the guy you promoted clubs.
He was like the DJ that I would hire at my club, you know? And so he's like, by the way, if you ever need a loan, you know, we're trying to support like music stuff, whatever. I was like, can I have your card? And he gave me a loan, and like I quit, you know, EMI like the next day, and I started doing my thing.
So who is this banker?
Alex Hernandez. Do you know him?
Alex Hernandez. I believe I do.
He's still my banker today, by the way.
Ah.
I love him very, very much. He's amazing.
So he gives you, it was $50,000, was it?
Something like that, yeah.
And what happened? Did you lose it all?
No, no.
I'm afraid to ask. I don't know.
I started consulting, doing this. You know, Natasha started making money. And then I got this job offer at AEG. And it was like, well, if I'm going to go, if I can still manage. So I always kind of had that, like, I want to do both, you know, from day one. So, you know, things ended up not working with Natasha. I think she just didn't really want the career that was in front of her, you know. And then I just focused on promoting. And then until Juanes.
Okay, you focused on promoting, but you could not let management go. Because I remember that sometime in your tenure at AEG started doing really well with Latin shows,
But you started managing again. You started managing Juanes.
Yeah.
It's like you couldn't help yourself.
I mean, listen, you know, it's a blessing, right? It's like, you know, I think to, you know, for an artist to want you to, like, walk that road with them, you know? So I think they're the ultimate creators, and being able to be next to them and helping with strategy and helping make good decisions and build smart businesses around them, like, that's really inspiring to me. It's not something I've necessarily looked for, but I think it's in my nature, so I don't fight it.
Why do you think? Because management is hard, Rebecca.
It's really hard.
You're taking care of this. You have kind of this person's life in your hand. Mm-hmm. What is it that you like most about it? The building something from nothing, or what is it?
You know, definitely building careers is a passion of mine. I'm just very maternal, you know, in my way of being and nurturing. And so I have this tendency of like, let me take care of you. Let me help you. Like, let me help you in every way. And that's kind of management, you know. So it's, like I said, it's my nature, so I don't fight it. You know, I'm like that even when I help people that are not my clients. I help a lot of artists that are my all the time. I help friends of mine all the time. I think that the only way to truly, you know, I think find like satisfaction is when by helping others. Like happiness is cool, it's there, but it's fleeting. But true satisfaction comes from helping others. So it's just what I love to do. Mm-hmm.
When you left AEG, AEG of course is a big ass promotion, concert promotion company. You had a very solid job and then you kind of walked away from that. Mm-hmm. Why?
Well, I had been there for 11 years and I had an amazing run, you know, really and truly amazing. I had a blast. You know, I worked with amazing people and all of them really were generous and lifted me up and let me grow. And I would come in like, we should do this now. And they're like, all right, let's do it. You know, so I was at the time, nobody had ever done arena tours with reggaeton. And like, you know, there wasn't a proven track record. They had done clubs always, but it's like, no, it's bigger than that, you know, and having, you know, an AEG kind of getting behind that and saying, yeah, we're going to support that. Like that was big for the culture, you know? There's a lot of things, you know, that I think I got to learn a lot about: making deals, negotiations, where all the money is. and I grew a lot. We got into South America. I was part of the Rolling Stones team in Cuba. Like, you know, we did so much. We did a festival in London, like so many things. And I felt like I had already set out to do. And it was time to really focus on and management. And I was going to sign Rosalia. And I knew it. And I felt like I can't take on another client and also promote like something's going to suffer. And I'm not of the mindset of grab it all, do it all, be it all. Like I'd rather like focus and really make something big happen every time I hit it. You know, I go up to the bat than try to swing at it 50 times.
And you said that you learned where the money comes from. Mm-hmm. Do you find that as a woman in the music business, this is an area where women really are lacking? Maybe they tend to go into marketing and they don't go, don't understand the money part of the equation?
I really had a lot of ambition always, I still do. And it's like, how do I use the 24 hours in the day to be as productive as possible and to help me grow and help me make money? And I think that last part about making money was something that took me a minute. I think as women, we're not programmed to think about money, talk about money.
Ask for money,
deal with money, you know.
It's how, like, did you learn?
My husband's he's been a huge teacher for me. Like, he's an amazing, amazing negotiator. He's been very, very, very helpful. I think also just being around badass negotiators all the time. Like, and when you're in concert business, it's like you're making a deal every day. There's money on the table every day. So in every way, you know, deal with the venues, deal with ticketing companies, deal with production companies, you know, it's all just deals everywhere. So you have to be really sharp and know how to get it. Overall, it's like taking the emotion out of the deal, you know, and
really, that's hard.
It's hard, but it's the only way to make real money, because otherwise you can just, you know, just kind of get that, like, kind of like dog with a bone. You just want to get it, even if it means you're going to lose money. And like, that's dangerous. So I think, you know, that's really where you have to have like a cool head about it. Yeah.
And does that also apply to making deals with people you like and turning people you like down, maybe?
Yeah, it's awful. I hate that. It's awful. It's awful, but I've also learned that the power of no is very, very, very big. And I think in the Latino culture, like, we have a tendency of like saying yes to everything, and anybody who calls for a collab, and it's like, you know, some big artist calls, even if it's not good for you, it's like, oh, I'll do it, you know, just cause, you know, like, or we get invited to a party, you got to go to the party. It's like, dude, you know, you have to, I think, know your value, and like, when it's not good for you, don't do it. And I think that kind of, you know, attitude weighs way more in the end than trying to do everything.
What is your management philosophy? How do you approach your business?
Well, I think that definitely have a criteria for the artists I work with. I think I like it when they have very much like an athlete's approach to being an artist, in the sense that they have discipline, that they are open to critique for their betterment, that they rehearse, you know, that they show up on time, that they, you know, work their voice, that they, you know, they're committed to their craft in a way that's Olympian, like, you know, like everything to be better. You know, I think people that have that kind of hunger and that drive are the ones that really get there. And I don't want to have to be chasing after anybody to make them rich and famous. It's not what this is going to be like. You know, I don't chase money. You know, so I think it's all about really building like real careers and people who are just as committed as I'm going to be to them, you know, because that's my philosophy. So I think that's super important. And I think just for me personally, everybody has different styles, love their music. I have to really be able to sit down with you and be like, you have to hear the new Lunai album. It's fucking amazing. Like, I'm so proud.
Now, we were talking about the power of no and the power of knowing business. What do you think women should know before they get into the music business? And not necessarily just the Latin music business, the music business overall. Like, what do you see lacking? Because I know you mentor a lot of girls. So what do you see lacking?
Before I answer that question, I want to go back to the other question. I don't think I really answered it about the money. I feel like what's important for women to understand when they're creating their path is, what's your ambition? What's your goal? And work backwards from there. Like, do you, you know, how much money, what's your dream salary? And don't negotiate against yourself. Like, what do you really want to earn? Like, what do you, like, how, and then figure out, okay, well, what kind of job do I have to get that? Like, because you can't just be a service provider, like, let's say, and not, you know, and make the kind of money that's like, fuck you money. So unless you create like a firm and you sell it, and, you know, it's a good situation, you know, it's not way more challenging. Whereas if you know, okay, well, I know that if I make people money, I'm gonna make money. You know, if I become a profit center, you know, then I can grow financially from that. So I think those are the things that I realized when I was promoting, of like being at a label where there's like, I always felt like there was more of a ceiling with the salaries, you know, and then being in a place where you're making, you know, you're a profit center every day. You know, you're like, we made this, and now I want more money. It's like, okay, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it's like, once you start adding up your value and what you're bringing, it's like, then it's easier to go in and say like, hey, you know, you got to pay me more money because I just made you this. You know what I'm saying? I think women are so intimidated to ask for things like that and to put things on the table. And it's like, isn't it worse to get paid less?
I don't know. When did you come to this realization in your own career? Was there a point when you were working at a label and you said, this is bullshit, I'm going to go on my own, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't think I could make real money there.
Is that why you went and decided to manage JD Natasha?
I just wanted to be an entrepreneur. I work in somebody else's building. You know, if I work on my own, there's no ceiling, you know? So it's just like, you know, like, just, it's a lot about believing in yourself too, you know? It's like, you have to really believe that you can, like, land opportunities too, you know what I'm saying? And like, so, but I think it's really important to at least have clear your goals so that you can work backwards from there. Not everybody wants to do this. You know, some people are like, I just want to make this amount of money and like have a nice out, and then, which is perfect. You know, it's just having clear what that goal is.
So where do you get your self-belief, Rebecca? From your parents? Yeah. Is there someone, a mentor at that, when you early on?
I come from Cuban immigrants, and I think there's something to like being children of immigrants that you feel like you have to do better than your parents and you have to prove that it was worth it, like the whole thing. And there's something inside of us that I think it just drives us really hard. And my brother is a complete badass at what he does. My dad's about it. My parents are brilliant. Like, so my dad, when I was a little kid, I think I've told you this before, we were in the car and he's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Every day. Like, what do you want to be? Where do you want to go to college? You know, like every day. And so what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, well, Dad, I was thinking like, could I be president of the United States? And he's like, yeah, you can. He said, you know, you have to convince a lot of people because there's never been a woman president. And you're going to have to work really hard. But yes, could you do it? Yes. I was like, wow, okay. I had heart surgery as a baby. So I was like,
I didn't know this.
Yeah. I'm like, can I be a pediatric cardiologist? And he's like, yeah. You know, it's like 12 years of school. Because you got this, and then you have this residency, and this, but can you do it? Yes. And I'm like, can I be a singer? And he's like, absolutely not. And it was just that moment was so important because it made me think that the other two were true. You know, that like I really could be president. I really could be this pediatric cardiovascular surgeon. You know, like that it was up to me. You know, but obviously I couldn't be a singer because, you know, I don't have a good voice. So that's that. I think from very early on, like just they constantly encourage me and like, you know, put me in situations. I think also sports was huge. You know, influence in like leadership skills, team building skills.
What sport did you play?
Being competitive. I played soccer and I played volleyball, but just being on a team, like walking onto a team, you know, creating that bond, that the trust, you know, and like working towards a goal together and like celebrating together. And
now I want to go back a little bit because I'm sure a lot of people are listening and wondering, well, I want her to manage me. Mm-hmm. So when you signed J Balvin specifically, mm-hmm. what did you see in him? Mm-hmm. What compelled you to sign him?
So Juanes, my partner, you know, he was also my client, my partner.
Again, Juanes.
He's still one of my closest friends. I love and adore him so much. And he had told me for years, like, you got to check out this guy, J Balvin. Like, he's something different. He's something else. And I literally just like never paid attention to him because I'm like, what do you know about it? Like, you're like, you know, like totally dismissed Juanes. And then the Latin Grammys, I think it was 2013. So there was a Universal after party and Balvin was performing. And I got to the show and I remember seeing him and I remember the feeling of like, you know, okay, I get it. And I saw like the whole thing. I just saw everything in him. I saw everything in him. He was so different than everything that was happening at the time.
So what do you look for? Like, because you're very visceral, Rebecca. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think definitely somebody who is super unique and authentic to who they are, you know, mm-hmm. who knows who they are, you know, who knows what they want to do, who has a clear like DNA established. I think that's, and you know, Jose is just, I mean, you know, you've been around him, you know, he's super special, you know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. It was funny though. So he did that performance and I was just, okay, I had the whole vision like right there. And afterwards, Juanes introduced us, whatever. And then later on that night, he came up to me and he's like, so what'd you think of the show? And I was like, honestly? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, I mean, you're amazing, but you should never do that again. It was terrible. He was like, what? He's like, can I have your number? I'm obviously very critical about shows. And I think it's super important to build like an amazing show and not just be casual about your performances. So he was still growing. He was a baby at the time. You know what I mean? So then I got him on the Enrique Pitbull tour, mm-hmm. to open up for that. And that's it. And we started working together. And
that was a big move. So again, it was shining the spotlight, what you were saying.
Yeah.
Now, the record industry, the music industry is obviously hugely different now. Yeah. You began with Balvin. This is kind of pre-streaming taking off. So mm-hmm. he was still an albums artist. Yeah. And now you're with Rosalía and Lunay at a time when it's all about streaming. Mm-hmm. Was this a big shift for you mentally and how you approach the business?
I mean, I think that, like, you know, we're in the music business, it's ever changing, you know, so we always have to be ready for that, the next shift, you know, because it's coming, you know, nothing lasts forever in music in terms of like trends and consumption. You have to be super agile right now. There's no rule book anymore, you know. Independents can have the same success as majors, you know. There's streaming just changed everything. It's really truly the democratization of music to, you know, to a degree. I think for the Latin business, it's the best thing that happened to us because it was finally, their consumption was finally quantifiable, and now the region was like a serious business, you know, financial contributor, and it no longer was an afterthought, which mm-hmm. we all lived that, you know, for all of our careers until, you know, streaming came along. So for me, it's been glorious, like, to be able to see, like, Latin music kind of flex and have its moment on, you know, in the global spectrum, like, as its own, like, legit genre that's not, oh, it's a trend. It's like, no, mm-hmm. this is real. This is not going anywhere, and this is real, and the music is fire, and everybody in the world's listening to it, and fuck off. So it's exciting, you know? It's very, very exciting to be a part of that and, like, to be in that realm right now.
Now, I want to go back quickly to the issue of women, because not to harp on it, but there's very few women managers, at least in Latin music, which is mm-hmm. my realm. I know of two or three. There's still very few women songwriters. Mm. There's even less women producers. There's more female executives in the labels. I see that more. Mm-hmm. But definitely in the management side, there's not a lot. So what is your advice? What would you say to women who want to enter this industry?
I'm not sure why there's not more. You know, I could just tell you my experience. You know, I don't have children, for mm-hmm. example. So that definitely makes it easier because management is really consuming. It's not something you can just check out of ever. And you're responsible for somebody's career, which in a lot of ways is their life. And like, it's not something to be taken lightly. And it's when you start to succeed, it's like there's a lot of money on the table and like things that are going, and you cannot take your eye off the ball, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a huge responsibility. I think the reason I do your podcast and I've done the things I've done with you, and it is not because I want attention for myself. It's for this very reason of like, if you can see it, you can be it. And when I was growing up in the business, how awful that sounds, I'm so old. But you know, there weren't really those references of women that I saw that I was like, I want to be like that.
I was going to ask you who your role model was.
No.
I can't think of any.
No. I have my role models, like people that I'm a huge fan of their careers, like Jerry Weintraub. Like that's the kind of thing that I'm like, wow, that's the kind of career I want to have, you know. But I don't know those women. I don't know if maybe they exist and I just don't know them, because I hope that they do. But regardless, this is what we need to do, is put a light on people who can then, somebody who's growing up can look and go, oh, I want to do that. That's cool. Like, I see myself doing that. I can see. I think important to, as an industry, when we do find that female producer who crushes it, let's talk about it. You know, let's put a light on her too. Let's find those writers and like talk about it, you know, so that it's like, it's contagious, you know. But if it just happens like in a dark room somewhere and nobody knows about it, it's like, what's the point?
Wonderful. Well, Rebecca, before we finish, I'd like to do like this little sequence of quick questions and quick answers. What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of like disappointing people.
Okay. Who would you like to have dinner with? Historical figure or someone who's alive that you've never had dinner with?
Jason Bateman. Oh, obsessed.
You're a sneakerhead. What's your favorite pair?
I'm an Air Max girl. I love Air Max. I wear all kinds of, I love Nikes. I wear everything, but I love Air Max. I always go back to it.
And what's your guilty pleasure?
In terms of what?
I don't know, watching bad soap operas late at night. Does that show what my guilty pleasure is?
I love going on the boat, you know. Like, and I got that little tiny 17-foot one there, so it's like I'm really enjoying, like, just for an hour, like, just taking off and coming back. Like, I love the water. Like, anything that involves me being in the water, like, makes me happy.
What can you simply not stand in a person?
I just can't stand when somebody's hurtful, you know. I just can't. I don't understand ever the need to hurt somebody.
Wonderful. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much. We've been chatting here with Rebecca León, the CEO and founder of Lionfish Entertainment, manager extraordinaire of Rosalia, Lunay, St. Pedro, formerly J Balvin, Juanes, here in Latin Hitmaker, presented by Billboard. It's been a pleasure, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me. I love you so much.